It is amazing. I love the steps, but you know, a lot of people in Alcoholics Anonymous, and me included when I was new in Alcoholics Anonymous, thought that that was it. That's the Alpha and the Omega, man. I've got it together now. I've got these steps in my life. Gone. It's fine. I knew an awful lot about staying sober, and I discovered a great many shortcomings within myself. And I'd done a lot of things, but I didn't know anything about Alcoholics Anonymous. None whatsoever. I knew about a program, an individual program of recovery that's outlined in the book, but I knew nothing about the fellowship of Alcoholics Anonymous. And I was one of those kinds of people who thought that a triangle only needed one leg. That's how slick I was. That a triangle only needs one leg. And you'd be surprised at the number of people in Alcoholics Anonymous who think a triangle only has one leg. The symbol of Alcoholics Anonymous, the trademark of Alcoholics Anonymous, has always been a triangle inside of a circle. And a triangle has three sides. It's like this, one, two, and a bottom. It doesn't have just one side, but a lot of people think that's all it has. It only has one side. That triangle is the 12 steps. They think that's what the whole thing is. The triangle says on it, unity, service, and recovery. The 12 steps are only recovery. The traditions are unity, and the concepts are service. And to me, I believe that everything encompasses in that circle is what makes up the whole of the whole thing. Now, when I was new in Alcoholics Anonymous, I used to sit in meetings, and where I go to meetings a lot of times, they read the traditions after the coffee break, just to kind of calm the crowd down. That's what I thought. We even got to the point now where we have some of these places where they sing along at the end of them. Principles before personalities. They haven't learned anything else, but that's what they sing along. And when I was new, I used to sit there, I used to think, this. I remember one night, very long time ago, I was in a meeting with my sponsor, and I'm new in Alcoholics Anonymous, and I danced around, and I thought when they got ready for the coffee break to be over, that means that was the time for me to go to the bathroom. When the coffee break was over, that was the time for me to do, because I'd been busy at the coffee break telling everybody how wonderful I was. Because I was there with the sponsor, you know. He's the speaker, so I'm with him. And so I'm letting everybody, and all the stuff that I knew, I didn't realize that what that meant was sit down and shut up and pay attention. I thought that meant, oh, that's the time to go get coffee and go to the bathroom. You know, which is, seems to be a common mode in most places that you go to. That only means that, well, I'll do it whenever I feel like it. They're getting ready to do something, but really not important until I get through doing whatever I want to do. And this particular night, I'm really kind of wrapped up in that. And along about the time they read the 12th edition, I kind of slid in the seat alongside of my sponsor. And just waited for him to do what I came here for him to do. And hear him talk. That's why I went. So I could go home and kind of analyze his talk in the middle of the night and find out where he was wrong and how many times he mentioned me with him and all these things that he never did. And wondered when they were going to ask me to talk, because they knew I was really going to be something because I was with him. And I knew he really didn't have as much as me, because my story was a little more bizarre than his anyhow. I had all these wonderful ideas that most newcomers have. And so I'm sitting there, and he gives a talk, and we're on the way home that night, and he always used to ask me little questions in the car, and just meaningless questions from, you know, stupid old timers that didn't really understand that today's message was different than yesterday's message, and all these things that nobody knows anything about but just newcomers. And he said to me, "Johnny, you enjoyed the message?" I said, "Yes, I did, Norm. I really enjoyed your talk. You gave a great talk." That's what you're supposed to say to your sponsor. That's the, for your newcomer, that's the answer. That's what you say to your sponsor. "Yes, I enjoyed your talk. Gave a good talk. I really got a lot out of it." Pray God he doesn't ask you what. Because you ain't really listening anyhow. You know, I mean, you're looking for her or it or whatever it is. You're checking out that night. He says, "You hear the traditions, Johnny?" I said, "Oh, yeah, I heard them." He said, "What do you think about them?" I said, "Oh, they are to the group what the steps are to the individual." He stopped the car. He said, where do you get this nonsense at? Where do you come up with all these stupid ideas at?" He said a lot of other things, but there's ladies present, and I tell you, he was really irate at me.
I said, I heard him read that in the meeting.
I'm indignant. Don't question me. I'm new. And I know more than you do, but I'm not telling you. It's what I'm thinking, but I ain't saying that to him. And he said, where do you get this stuff? And I said, well, that's what they read in the meeting. The tradition are the group, but the steps are the individual. He said, Johnny, the guy that wrote the Traditions of Alcoholics Anonymous said he wrote them once upon a time because of a personal weakness within himself that he saw in every one of those. He says, if you're an alcoholic and you say you're an alcoholic and you identify with Bill Wilson, then maybe you have that weakness in every one of those things too. I suggest that you go home and look at those traditions on a personal matter, because they are very personal. And I said, well, how would I do that? He said, take the we out of there and put I in there. He says, you're good at that and everything else. Why don't you just try something that's constructive? So I did that. And I discovered many things. That Alcoholics Anonymous in the 1940s was very much at the same stage of self-destruction that the Washingtonian groups were 100 years prior to that in 1840-something. And the reason for that is because people were running around all over doing everything. You know, some people were selling memberships in Alcoholics Anonymous, and they had restrictions on who could come and who could go, and, you know, they checked your ID and your blue blood and all this other stuff, and it sounds like some groups anyhow, but just today. They were asunder, you know. They were ready to disintegrate. We would have been lost and gone. And some guy in North Carolina wrote a letter to Bill Wilson and said to him that it seems like that Alcoholics Anonymous is headed in the same direction as the Washingtonians. And for you who don't know what the Washingtonian was a group of people in the 1840s who got together, five alcoholics, and started talking to one another, found out they stayed sober, and in the next two or three years, they grew to somewhere in the neighborhood of 500,000 people strong, which is faster and far more rapid than Alcoholics Anonymous ever dreamed about going. And then they made the mistake, like most spiritually intoxicated people seem to make. They think the idea that, God, if this program is so good for alcoholics, maybe it ought to work for everybody. Maybe we ought to just open up the doors and let everybody come and let everybody do the same thing, because it's all the same. And so they got people who started to become resentful because they asked somebody else to speak instead of them. They had people who went on platforms and started defending prohibition and slavery and all these outside issues and doing all these things. And in just three or four short years, the Washingtonians had just completely and totally disintegrated from within. Not from without, but from within. They couldn't be found. And so 100 years later, when this guy wrote a letter to our founder, co-founder Bill Wilson, asking about it, he hadn't even heard about the Washingtonians. So he started reading about it, and he found out that most of the things that destroyed the Washingtonians were the things that are confined within the 12 traditions of our fellowship called Alcoholics Anonymous. And so he set about to write them. And in 1950, or 51, whenever it was, they had a conference, and they had people get up at different meetings and try to sell the 12 traditions to the Fellowship of Alcoholics Anonymous, and thank be to God that they were accepted. Because I know just as sure as I'm standing here, if there hadn't been for these 12 traditions, there wouldn't be an Alcoholics Anonymous today. And there damn sure wouldn't have been one in 1959 when I came here. Because left to our own devices with no guidelines, we're going to destroy ourselves. We're trying to do that today. Because wherever you go and whatever you do, if you really want to turn off the crowd, start talking about the traditions. I mean, people don't want to hear that. And there's a reason for that. 90% of the people don't know a damn thing about them, and the other 10% are violating them. Because they're not the most interesting thing, but they are the lifeblood of Alcoholics Anonymous. They're the reason that you and I can gather up in Oaklawn on July 27th, 1996, and have a meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous, with nothing else going on here. The traditions, not the steps. The traditions. And what a lot of people don't know is hundreds of thousands of alcoholics died bringing these traditions to life, making it possible for you and I to sit down in a room
Look at it. Look what it says. It says my common welfare should come first. My recovery depends upon AA unit. If there ain't no AA, how am I going to recover? Where am I going to recover at? Treatment center? Their records are zip. Jails? I've been there, thanks.
Psychiatrist couch? Been there, too. Electroshock therapy? Had it, thank you. Made me angry, but I had it anyhow. Where am I going to go? Where am I going to recover from this seemingly hopeless state of mind and body if there's no AA? So it's paramount that we're unified. And what are we unified in? What is the common bond that holds Alcoholics Anonymous together? It's very simple. The singleness of purpose, which is what this is, the whole glue that holds each tradition together is the singleness of person. Because my recovery depends upon Alcoholics Anonymous being unified in a singleness of purpose, not branching off in all areas of delivery. You know, over here for this, and over there for that, and over there for this. Some clown came up with some idea many years ago that everything is all one big disease. He guy in one of these treatment centers, and the only reason he said that because he only had one bus. Get everybody to go to these treatments. Why it went. It's not the same disease. There's no, the biggest lie that's spread out over the world today is there's such a thing called a disease of addiction. What a lie that is. Alcoholism is a disease. That's why Alcoholics Anonymous works. Addiction is an addiction. If you're not addicted to anything anymore, you're not addicted. That's why drug addicts don't seemingly have to do anything but quit using drugs. It's amazing. See, for our group purpose, for my group purpose, there's only one ultimate authority, a loving God as he confessed himself in our group conscience. Our leaders are but trusted servants. They don't govern. The word there, servant. Servant. Servant is to serve. Servant is not to lead. New York doesn't understand that. A servant serves. We don't lead in Alcoholics Anonymous. We serve one another. We serve our fellowship. We serve one. That's what we do. We serve. The ultimate authority is a loving God has expressed himself in our group conscience. And no matter what the group conscience is, I have to obey it. You hear all this nonsense. Well, if you don't like what's going on in the group, get your coffee pot and start another meeting. Some other egotistical idea. What they're really saying, if they got down to right to cause and cause, is they ain't doing it my way. I think I'll go have another meeting somewhere else. That's what they're really the root cause of that. All that starts. They ain't doing it my way, the way I want it to be done. So I'm going to go start one where I can run things. That's really the real motivation behind that. Believe me, I know, because I've started a few meetings. I know about all that. Ain't doing it my way. Think I'll start one of my own. And sooner or later, they vote me out. And then I have to sit there and abide and swallow my own medicine. That's the way it works. I didn't make it. And one of the biggest lies is that third tradition. You hear the hue and cry from all the make-believes in Alcoholics Anonymous today. The only requirement for membership is a desire to stop drinking. That's not what it says in the long form of our traditions, which Julie didn't read. Nobody wants to read. It says in the long form of the tradition that we may refuse entrance to no one who wishes to recover from alcoholism. Alcoholism. And I think I tried to my damnedest to explain to you that drinking alcohol is not alcoholism. The drinking alcohol is not recovering from a seemingly hopeless state of mind and body, and not drinking it is not recovering from a seemingly hopeless state of mind and body. And another thing you got to remember too, that when they wrote that tradition, we didn't have social climbers trying to jump into Alcoholics Anonymous to be part of the group. It wasn't a thing to do in 1940 is to join Alcoholics Anonymous and have some place to hang out. To score and have a dance on Saturday night. It wasn't there at all. They say every group ought to be autonomous. That means it's self-governing. It means it's self-governing. Except in fact, the matter matters are AA group, AA groups as a whole. That's what it says. I should be autonomous. I should be self-governing except in whatever matters affecting AA as a whole or the group that I'm in. I should be self-governing. That means I can do whatever I feel like doing. As long as I don't declare that I'm a member of Alcoholics Anonymous so they can see my bad behavior, because that might affect AA.
And I don't know how many do, but there seems to be a big run of the mills in these things.
People are so blinded in Alcoholics Anonymous that they don't understand. It's like these questions that were asked that I explained. I explained all these questions that were asked when I explained them. But somehow during lunch, they forgot what it was that I said, or they didn't hear it in the first place. And we have a thing in Alcoholics Anonymous called closed meetings and open meetings. That's the only kind of meetings we have. Open meetings is where we allow anybody to come in, but only alcoholics participate in it. If a non-alcoholic participates in an AA meeting, it is no longer an AA meeting. Addicts, pure and simple, are not members of Alcoholics Anonymous. A pure drug addict cannot be a member of Alcoholics Anonymous, because you have to be an alcoholic to be a member of Alcoholics Anonymous. Now, you can be an alcoholic who views other things, but you got to be an alcoholic. And when a non-alcoholic approaches a podium of Alcoholics Anonymous, it's no longer an AA meeting. A closed meeting means alcoholics only participate there. That's what that means. That is a closed meeting for alcoholics only. Open meetings do not mean that anybody can participate in them. It means anybody can attend them, but only alcoholics participate. In my home groups back in California where I live, we made a little statement at the end of the meeting: come back next week, but all the participants next week will be sober alcoholics. That's what the fourth tradition is. Why is that? Very simple. Alcoholic comes into Alcoholics Anonymous meetings. This is the last house on the block for a lot of people. This is where you get people sliding into the back rooms and the back seats of Alcoholics Anonymous and sitting in here, who've been through all these other outside agencies and seemingly have damn near died in the attempt to run all this intellectual hogwash through their heads. And dying under the lash of alcoholism, they may think, look in their directory and say, God, there's a meeting in Oakland, two blocks down the street from where I live. I'm going to slide in there. And maybe what I heard back there somewhere, Alcoholics Anonymous, or that meeting I saw, maybe there's an answer for me. And so he slides into a meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous, and he sits down in the back row. And some fool is standing up there talking about recovering from chocolate eclairs. Or, you know, her alcoholic, or his alcoholic, or whatever they call them. Anyway, what I'm trying to say is, somebody standing there talking about anything other than the disease of alcoholism is not an Alcoholics Anonymous meeting. The traditions prove that. That we have no opinion on outside issues. Here we talk about alcoholism and the recovery from it. If this poor old alcoholic comes wandering into a meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous unannounced, and he's looking for something to hang on to, and he hears anything except about the recovery from this thing that's killing him, he's going to slide out the door and die out there somewhere. And because we want to be all things to all people, which destroyed the Washingtonian groups, we haven't got enough courage of our own convictions to say so, which makes us less than anything. We aren't principled. We're just a bunch of sheep being led to the slaughterhouse, because we're going to destroy ourselves if we don't have the courage of our own convictions. This thing has to survive, or people like me are going to perish. And the people who are going to come behind me are going to perish. Alcoholics Anonymous is not all things to all people. I've had to learn that. And it says that I have but one primary purpose in life, and that's to stay sober and to carry the message to the alcoholic who still suffers. I don't have any other purpose than that. It's to stay sober and carry the message to the alcoholic who still suffers. What the group is supposed to do. That's why that's tied into four. That's why that's tied into three. That's why it's tied into the whole thing. The singleness of purpose is right there. To carry its message to the alcoholic who still suffers. And if you're not an alcoholic, you can't carry the message to an alcoholic. Because they don't listen.
We do not listen to anything that doesn't have weight and depth. We do not listen to anything that doesn't hit us where we live. We're not going to listen to anybody who hasn't been where we've been. We have a... If you listen to some of them, you always hear their mind go, closed. I listen to that. People said to me, I hear people talk about things that have no earthly use to anything but to the mind. If you listen real carefully, you can hear my mind closed. I won't listen. I want to hear that story one more time. What a great foresight they had when they wrote this book and said, we tell in a general way what we used to be like, what happened to us, and what we're trying to be like today. What a great foresight. But you see, the people who wrote this book were alcoholics, recovering from a seemingly hopeless state of mind and body, and they knew what it was to get their attention. Dr. Bob knew that you shouldn't louse this thing up with all kind of Freudian intellectual statements would have no earthly use to anything but the egotistical mind. That the message to hold these people have to have weight and depth, and where it comes from our experience. It doesn't come from anything else. So you have to have these traditions. Our singleness of purpose is paramount. We got to keep it paramount. You know, we get too worried today about how many people are showing up at our places. I hear people talk about, God, that's the biggest meeting in the Chicago area. So what? Is it any more important than the one down the street that has 10? How could it be? A lot of times, they forget what they're there for. They're so busy and being caught up into the social economic things of the time and what they're doing and when the next tea time is. I was at a group last Saturday morning at a men's stag at 7 o'clock. You know what the topic of conversation was? What time is your tea time? What time is yours? Oh, I'm 8, I'm 10. I sit at a banquet in Eugene, Oregon, 3 weeks ago on Saturday night. We're on a table with 10 other people. I sat there for 2 hours, and I never heard anything about alcohol or alcohol mentioned in the 2 hours. I was sitting there, and it was a guy I sponsored sitting there talking to me. Everybody else was caught up in all this meaningful, nonsensical stuff that has no earthly use for anything whatsoever. In an AA gathering, they're talking about everything in AA, but what they're supposed to be talking about here, and that's the solution. You hear these meetings and people go around and say, I have a problem. Fine, take it to your sponsor. What? Take it to your sponsor. That's what you do in AA, you know. You take your problems to your sponsor, bring your solutions to AA. This is not group therapy. If you want to go to group therapy, go hire a psychiatrist or a therapist, for Christ's sake, and go to group therapy. I don't want to hear. I have nothing against all those therapeutical things. Just keep them the hell out of AA, that's all. Because I'm concerned about the alcoholic who's going to die if they don't quit bringing that nonsense in here and justifying it. Our primary purpose is to carry the message to the alcoholic who still suffers, and you tell me how that can benefit an alcoholic who still suffers. That Freudian intellect crap that don't work, that intellectual stuff that stimulates the intellect but has no earthly purpose for anything whatsoever. Primary purpose. The tradition is all about the primary purpose. I should never endorse, finance, or lend my name to any related facility or outside enterprise. Not me. I don't do that. I don't run around and brag that I'm a member of AA to anybody to listen. I just go on about my business, trying to do the best of my ability to do what that says. These problems of money, property, and prestige avert me from my primary spiritual aim. That's what I was telling you about that meeting I was at last week. Everybody showed up dressed and ready for the golf course. They couldn't hardly wait for that 8 o'clock bell to go off so they could run out to their tee times and play golf. Now, I'm saying anything wrong with golf. I like to play golf. But we're supposed to be in that meeting talking about the disease of alcoholism and the recovery from it. Not of what my tee time was, what my best score was last week. Oh, I'll talk to you about what I played yesterday. You want to know after the meeting. But that's not what we're here about. You know, we're not here to discuss. I'm not getting along with Mary Jane tonight because I spent too money on the car last week. I'm not here because, you know, because they looked at me cross-eyed down at the streetcar stop. Or I'm not here because I had a bad day today. I don't go to participation meetings. And the reason I don't go to participation meetings is because I don't ever hear anything. I call them moaning groans. Because the reason I don't hear anything in participation meetings is because I don't go there to do anything but participate. That's why they call them participation meetings. And I don't hear anything because I'm waiting to figure out what I'm going to say when they call on me. And then after they get through calling on me, I'm sitting there worrying about what I should have said when I was up there talking. If they don't call on me, I'm pissed off anyhow, and I go home and still never heard anything. Such is the very nature. And don't tell me it's any different from any of you. Well, you can masquerade and say, I go there to share. No, you don't. You go there to talk. Don't go there to share. What do you share? Listen to sharing. I'm afraid that a lot of people who go to those type of meetings, if they had to shut up and listen, would be bombarded by information they don't know anything about. I go to meetings and listen. I have 3 meetings a week I go to and sit there and listen. If I need to talk to anybody that I sponsor, we'll go talk. If I need to talk to my sponsor, I'll call him up and go talk to him. If I have a solution to anything, I'll give my solution. But I have to listen. I have to stop and hear small, quiet voice of God. And if I'm so busy worrying about what I'm going to say when it's my time, I don't hear anything. Nothing whatsoever. And I don't think that I'm any different than any other alcoholic. I think all alcoholics are like that. I think all alcoholics are more interested in what they're going to say and what they're going to hear. That's why we go to these meetings and sit around and discuss our philosophies. I don't know how many have ever been to a discussion meeting where the topic is such and such and nobody ever talks to this topic. They're all talking about their personal experiences before and after the fact. Happens all the time. I'm not saying that they're obsolete or there's no need for them, but if you're sitting in one, why don't you have the courage of your convictions? Instead of say, hey, let's talk about alcoholism and the recovery of it in here. I'm not interested in you not being able to pump gas in your car. Oh. That would be the courage of my conviction. I went to a meeting one night. I sat in this meeting because it's a Friday night meeting. A bunch of people I go there. And one of these gals got up and said she was having a bad day. Oh, I had a bad day. Oh. I said, why was that? She's talking to the podium. I had a bad day. I had to pump gas in my own car. I couldn't get to go to a self-service station. I said to her at the coffee break, Jesus Christ, you ought to be glad you got a car. She hasn't talked to me since. And I'm sure if she goes and gets drunk, she'll blame me. Got to blame somebody. It wouldn't be the fact that she took a sip. But that's what I'm talking about. What has that got to do with the recovery from alcoholism? You can't pump gas in your car. What if having a bad day on your job, God, would do in staying sober? God, I'd be glad you got a job. What has all this nonsense got to do? Got nothing to do with an AA meeting. We got to get back to our primary purpose, is to carry the message to the alcoholic who still suffers, talk about this disease called alcoholism. Because people are dying in the meetings that you're sitting in because they hear all that cycly gobbledygook. In meetings that I go to sometimes, people are dying because from time to time we get people up there talking about that cycle gobbledygook that they've been indoctrinated in. I sit in a meeting, my home group, last Monday night, and I was appalled. I heard the worst AA talk I've ever heard in my life. Man sit there for an hour and talks about all his babies that he sponsors and all the solutions he had for his babies. All of them. All he had, I don't know, that guy must be a 15-year sober man. He had a lot of babies. He must have had 30 or 40 of them. That's all he talked about for an hour. But he never talked about the disease of alcoholism or the recovery from it. And it was just amazing that I sit there and I looked around like I look at in all AA meetings. And I saw people bored to tears. Because alcoholics are funny, at least in my experience. They want to hear about this thing. They want to hear what you were like and why they do that. Why do we say what we were like and what happened to us, what we're trying to be like today? Why do we do that? For no particular personal gratification. I don't like going back to living in that hell that I lived in before I come to Alcoholics Anonymous. Sometimes I'm happy for the things that have happened to me, but I'm not very happy sometimes at the pain that I had to go through to get to a certain stage in Alcoholics Anonymous either. Yet I have to go back there and drag myself through all that muck and mire when I'm in a meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous. And why do I do that? It's to build a bridge of understanding between me and the newcomer. Newcomer's not going to understand what it's like to be 36 and a half years sober, for Christ's sake. He can't stay sober 36 days. But he can't identify with the nightmare of alcoholism that I lived in. And slowly but surely, between that identification and the hope, it will build a bridge of understanding from there to here, is what it's really all about. It's not about self-glorification or self-gratification. It's about building a bridge of understanding between this place and the newcomer, where the newcomer sits, so the newcomer can walk across that bridge of hope on your experience and have an opportunity to get sober and stay sober. That's what AA meetings are all about. That's what our singleness of purpose is. That's why we share what we were like and what happened to us and what we're trying to be like today. Not what we were like, what we were like, what we were like, what we were like. Because you sit around here sometimes, you figure out that they ain't no different today than they were when they got here. They're just not drinking anymore. And I didn't want that when I got here, and I'm sure most of you don't want that. I would like to have something better than that. I don't want to return to that hell without alcohol that I live. I live like that sometimes for months at a time, locked up in them institutions, in that hell that I lived in without alcohol. When I had to fight a drink all the time, what a terrible thing. And this thing that separates us from all those other things is those traditions. And so, now that I've gone through half of the traditions and isolated most of the people in the room and created a few more resentments, we'll have a little coffee break and have a smoke. Well, now that we've had this great exciting raffle, that book, Alcoholics Anonymous of Age, is about the brief history of Alcoholics Anonymous and all the struggle that they went through in the early days that I was just trying to talk to you about in the last little session we had here. You will see if you look into that book, Alcoholics Anonymous, the Alcoholics Anonymous Comes of Age, you will see that there's nothing new going on in AA at all. Because what you have to remember is the only thing wrong with Alcoholics Anonymous is full alcoholics. It really kind of got to you, didn't it? Yes. Otherwise, see, that's just deep stuff. You just have to wait for it to kind of drop in there on you. And we're all, you know, all these things happen because alcoholics are by nature selfish and self-centered, and they'd rather do something or look at you than look at themselves. They always have a better idea on how to do things, which seems to be a real good character defect. And they always want to do it like they don't know what's going on. You hear it all the time, you know, about them old folks didn't know what they were doing. Well, they did it well enough. What is making 12-step work possible? Alcoholics Anonymous. And being sober is what makes 12-step work possible. Basically, it's your central office. We get to the point somewhere where I live that a 12-step call isn't anything more than verification of insurance. We get people calling central office today to think all Alcoholics Anonymous is supposed to do is take them to treatment centers. And in my area, they're really in bad shape because every once in a while I get to answer the phones. Boy, they don't like that. I had a gal call me up one time and say, this Alcoholics Anonymous, and it was patched to me through an answering service because I had the phones that night. I says, yes, it is. What can I do for you? She says, I want you to come over here and take my brother to a treatment center. I said, you take him to a treatment center. Well, aren't you Alcoholics Anonymous? And I said, yes, I am. But that ain't got nothing to do with the treatment center. You want him to a treatment center? Take him. Or hire a cab. She hung up on me. But that's how stupid it is. I mean, we're not a taxi service. What is a 12-step called anyhow? It could be shaking hands at the door. It could be making coffee. It could be setting up. It should be sitting in the same seat every week when the meeting starts. What is a 12-step call? It's a message. 12-step call is not necessary. In the old days, when we used to go make 12-step calls, we used to take a pint of whiskey with us. Because sometimes we'd run into people who had a lot of trouble. I mean, they'd get gagging and chewing on their tongue and flopping around like a fish out of water. It's called whiskey fits. Don't see much of that anymore. Probably, I don't know how many have ever seen anybody in active DTs, but it ain't a pretty thing to see. We had a guy fall down at our Monday night meeting with DTs one night, and we had a bunch of activist people who were really out there helping folks, and they didn't know what to do with him. And so I reached over there and stuck something in his mouth and grabbed a hold of his tongue and told him, go down to the store and get a pint of wine. You're not going to give him a drink, are you? I said, yes, I am. He'll break his sobriety. I said, hell, he ain't got none. Went down, brought him back a pint of wine. He'd land there flopping around like a chicken, like he had his head cut off. I put a little teaspoon of that wine in that guy's mouth. And he went. I said, how you doing? He said, I'm fine, but I think I'd be a little bit better if I could have another teaspoon of that stuff. But the guy got sober, and I mean, he'd been sober ever since. I mean, that was his last little drink, but you can't let him die. We used to have to go. See, I'm very fortunate. I got sober before the advocate of money influenced the decision on how to treat alcoholism. I remember a point in my life when you could not admit an alcoholic to a hospital for alcoholism. What we had to do with somebody who was in bad shape was put him on a gurney, shoot him through the back door of the emergency room, and run like hell. I'm not saying that's any better, I'm not saying it's any worse today. But sometimes we get to thinking that our responsibility is just to get somebody here, and 99% of the people who go into treatment centers have no business being in there in the first place. No business being in there. I mean, it ain't that bad. How bad would you have to go to a treatment center if you've had 3 near beers? You know what a guy told me one time? He told me it takes 60 near beers to get drunk. What great information. Has money, property, and prestige ever diverted you personally? You bet. You bet your butt it has. I'm 6 years sober, but I got everything. I got a house and 2 cars and a garage. I got a wife and a couple kids. And I'm going to the meeting, parking my new car right in front. Somebody asked me how I do it, and I take them out there and show them my new car. My car. That's how I'm doing. How am I doing? Look at my new suit. That's how I'm doing. Got a house out here. Doing real well. Everything good out there. Going out to Baskin Robbins after the meeting. Ice cream sodas for the group. Big shot. Going home and nobody in the house, and I have to wander around the neighborhood to find my little children. Go rent a babysitter, and then I have to put them in the car and go around and find their mother, and I'd locate her from time to time in various bars or sundries around there. And one night I was in a meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous telling everybody how good I was and showing them my new car and all this kind of stuff. And 2 hours later, I damn near beat a man to death in a bar. Money, property, and prestige was diverting me, and I couldn't stay in Alcoholics Anonymous, you know, because I was 5 or 6 years sober. I got all this stuff. Doing good. I mean, everything on the outside looking good. I met a friend of mine who talked, I heard him talk a long time ago, and I really loved what he had to say, kind of things that just kind of set the tone of it. I remember he said that he was going somewhere to speak, and he was having some particular difficulties in his life, whether it was financial or personal or whatever it is, it really doesn't make a hell of beans, but he was just having difficulties in his life. But he'd been asked to talk, and he went out, and I guess he was having financial difficulties because he went out and spent $500 or $600 for this new suit, which he couldn't afford. And he was staying at his sister's house, where he was living free gratis. He come walking down the stairs, and he said to his sister, he said, how'd I look? She smiled at him. She says, you look real good on the outside, but how are you really on the inside?
And that's sometimes we can dress it up. Sometimes we sit in meetings of Alcoholics Anonymous, and we think because somebody gets up there and tells you about all the financial gains they've made, or all the degrees that they've accumulated since they've been sober, or all the things that they've accomplished out there in the world when they got sober, has some importance here. It really doesn't. Not to me. I'm not really impressed. I sit in meetings with movie stars. I sit alongside of people who run psychiatric hospitals. I sit in meetings with people who could buy and sell Oaklawn. I sit in meetings with Alcoholics Anonymous with people who don't have two coppers to rub together. And we're all the same. My sponsor and I, baseball fans that we are, go to the Dodger game. And we got four tickets, but we only take three of them because we take this real famous movie star with us to the meeting, to the baseball game. And he's a real famous guy, real famous movie star. We take him, and the only reason we take him is so we can have somebody to go get the hot dogs. Don't you got truth? And we'll be sitting there, and you know, we're sitting. He sits over on the end, and we sit over here, one seat away from him. And we're sitting there, and all of a sudden, sometime during the ball game, Clancy will go. This guy get up, run up the stairs, come back with hot dogs and Cokes and peanuts. And while he's coming back down the thing, waiting on this, Clancy nods me and says, Johnny, and I say, he said, try to look like a producer. And you'd be surprised at the people looking at us going, who are those guys? God, they must really be something important. There's a big star coming down here with his hot dogs and stuff, waiting on these two goofs. Two old fools sitting there, staring at him. But that's what I'm talking about. The level playing field here. Where we make mistakes is trying to keep these people who have money, property, and prestige think that they've got something that they ain't got here. We've killed more movie stars and doctors and lawyers and preachers and teachers in Alcoholics Anonymous than alcohol has. But trying to make them something that they ain't. You know why we do that? Because we think because we know them, it makes us something better. Wrong. The disease of alcoholism, the book says, that we're people who normally wouldn't mix. And it's really true. Anything other than recovery from the disease of alcoholism is a diversion from our primary purpose. Yeah. Sure is. I'm glad you listened to that one. What do you know about AA orientation? I think that's what it said. AA members going into treatment facilities and given info on AA. But we have a pamphlet on public information. I think we ought to say what Alcoholics Anonymous is and Alcoholics Anonymous isn't. I think we ought to make it very clear when we go into orientation that Alcoholics Anonymous is for alcoholics. That I don't think we do anybody any favors. As a matter of fact, I think we do them more harm and make them believe that AA is for everybody. I don't think there'd be anything worse for a person to be able to sit in an AA meeting and not identify with anything that goes on there. Really. I have said in the early days when before these outside program, these other 12-step programs got started, they used to ask Alcoholics Anonymous members to come over and talk at them. And I'd sit there and listen to part of their participation. I didn't identify with anything they were talking about. And I would go over and talk about maybe obsessions of the mind and what would happen to me once I ingested this stuff into my system and the things that I shared with you. But I didn't understand anything they were talking about because I didn't have those type of problems. I don't understand what it's like to sit and eat 17,000 Twinkies. I don't, and go puke and come back and eat 10 more. I don't know what it's like to take and put my house on the line and spin a wheel and gamble on it or throw the ball. I don't know anything about that because I don't have those type of illnesses. I use a lot of drugs, and I went to an NA meeting and didn't understand anything they were talking about one time. In their hour of participation, all they were talking about was how bad things were in their lives. And I don't want to hear how bad things are. I want to hear how the good things are. I want some hope here. I don't want to be walking out of an AA meeting feeling worse than I was. See, I don't identify with that thing. And I feel sorry for people who come to AA and don't identify here and try to fake it through here because they ain't got any place better to go. what a disservice we do. What a disservice we do to people who try to say, oh, it's okay, just go in there and tell them you are. That's a disservice. What tradition do you believe gets violated the most in AA? That requires some thinking. I think the one, number five, that and three, they're the ones who are under attack most. What our primary purpose of is and the requirement for membership here, I think those two run about neck and neck because those are the ones that are most under severe attack here. But I don't know why anybody would be in attack them. They say what they say, but they still try to attack them, I guess. Do you have secondary purposes? I think I improved my golf score. Would you say anything in the meeting if somebody identified themselves as only an addict? Yeah. I would say it to the person. We have a thing in our meeting. We ask for new alcoholics, and every once in a while somebody will stand up and say they're an alcoholic and an addict. But I find out that if they stay here long enough in Alcoholics Anonymous, sooner or later they drop the andas and become like everybody else. Because if they stay different, they disappear. What about special interest groups? Men only, gay, lesbian, etc. What responsibility do we have as AA members? Personally, I don't like special interest groups. That's my own personal opinion. And I'll tell you why. Because sooner or later, in every special interest group that I have ever seen, they forget the fifth tradition. And basically what they start to talk about in their conversation will be revolved around what they all commonly do. Doctors, lawyers, teachers, preachers, policemen, gays, sooner or later their meetings start to end up talking about sex or sexual problems. Men only, they get to bitching about their wives, and women only, they get to bitching about their boyfriends, and on and on and on. And they see that they forget what their primary purpose is. And that's been my experience in it. Airplane pilots get to requiring that, you know, I don't think that there's any meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous that an alcoholic can't go into. And there shouldn't be a meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous that you can't go into where you cannot identify. At least you can't call it an AA member meeting if you're going to have those type of meetings for people only, for this one only. You know, I have a friend of mine, a guy I sponsored, who was a very famous TV announcer. And there was a meeting, because he was such a great member of Alcoholics Anonymous, there was a meeting over in Glendale that was for TV personalities only. And he wouldn't attend it because he thought that was wrong. He thought that was a violation of our traditions. I believe it's a violation of the tradition. Where's the unity there? Where is the recovery? Where is the singleness of purpose? I mean, if I can only talk to dope dealing convicts who shot and maimed people, I'd have a very small group of people to talk to. If I could only talk to people who've had a series of electroshock treatments, men confined in nut houses and penitentiaries, I'd have a very small group of people sitting in AA meetings. But when I can talk about the disease of alcoholism, and that would be my primary purpose, it would encompass everybody sitting in here who's an alcoholic. And special interest groups, sooner or later, divert from their primary purpose. And that's just been my experience and what I've seen happen. You know, I got all kinds of lawyers in AA, and doctors in AA, and airplane pilots in AA, and police pilots, policemen AAs, and all these other kind of things. I'm not opposed to any of them, but we have a large homosexual area in Los Angeles and Hollywood, and they have AA meetings. They're good groups, some of them. But they're large open meetings, and they invite members of Alcoholics Anonymous to come in there and participate, and they're good meetings. But sometimes their participation before the main meeting starts is very bizarre. But that doesn't mean that I'm opposed to them. I just think that sooner or later that the fifth tradition is completely lost in what we're supposed to be trying to do here. You know, just always think about that little drunk, if you can. Always think about that little alcoholic who staggered in here unannounced and sits in our meetings, hoping against hope that he finds something here that he doesn't have to live that way anymore. Always keep him uppermost in your mind, people. And always remember that his only chance for survival is that if he identifies with this seemingly hopeless state of mind and body that he has, or he's going to die drunk. Because he don't have a choice. So that's why we can't do all this stuff. Dr. Bob said many years ago, if you took AA's 12 steps and broke them down to simplicity, it'd be two words, love and service. I do not love anything I can serve. And I won't serve anything I don't love. And from what I see, for a lot of people hanging around here, much of them don't care much about Alcoholics Anonymous because they won't do nothing here but just show up. You know, and it doesn't say anything in love and service that I can only love doctors, or I can only share with convicts, or I can only share with whatevers. It says here that we're alcoholics, that our common welfare comes first, that our life depend on the unity of this thing, not the separate little pigeonhole things that we do. It's a very simple thing. Seven says that I should be self-supporting, declining outside contribution. My sponsor told me that when I first got sober, that I should go to work, that I was a bum. I told him, I'm not a bum. He said, what are you? I said, I'm an AA member. He says, you're an AA bum. Bums don't work. Go to work. And then he made the awfulest statement I ever, he told me to get off of welfare. I told him, hey, don't you ever say that to me. I'm not on welfare. I've never been on welfare. He said, what do you call living in a penitentiary? Self-supporting through your own contributions. Well, why is that? Why do we have to be self-supporting? Why do we pass the basket at meeting to pay for our rent and buy our coffee? Why do we do that? Very simple. It's because no outside agency can come into the Oakland Big Book Group, or this church can't come into this thing and say, look, we're giving you free rent and free coffee, and this is what we want you to do. We want you to kind of tone this thing down and let our minister come down here and lecture to your people. If you're any good self-supporting group, you can tell him, screw off, Buster. We'll go rent another hall. But what if he's giving you rent free and letting you free coffee, and you ain't paying your own thing? Whoever's doing that to you can dictate any type of terminology they want to do to you. And you have to go along with it, or else find another place. And so supposedly that Alcoholics Anonymous disappears, that none of us were self-supporting, we all become a bunch of bums around here, and nobody put more than 50 cents in the basket or looked the other way when it came or went to the bathroom when they thought the bathrooms were going to be passed. And so we never paid anything. And the only place we could hold meetings, the only place that would allow us to come in and hold meetings rent-free, would be some hospitalization or something. Think about it. That's why we have to be self-supporting, declining outside contributions. We don't take, you know that nobody can donate more than $1,000, I guess it is, to the General Service Office. You know, some guy a long time ago died and wanted to leave a house to Alcoholics Anonymous and they wouldn't accept it. I wrote him a letter, told him I would. Never answered my letter. But I mean, I would. As an individual, I could accept his house. You know what I mean? But Alcoholics Anonymous can't accept gifts because it says in the 12 and 12, he who pays the piper calls the tune. He who pays the piper calls the tune. And if they're letting you live rent-free, you are violating the seventh sedition. If you're in a facility where they don't demand that you pay for that rent, and they allow you to meet in there and have coffee free gratis and all this other kind of stuff, and that group is not self-supporting, they are violating the 12th tradition. I have a guy that I sponsor who's involved in an Alano club in Newport Beach. And he's very proud to tell me that they have 14 meetings a week there. It's fine. Do they all pay rent? I ask him. Do they all pay for their coffee? And he said, well, no, some of them don't have that many people. Then I said, then shut them down. Make them all go to other meetings. Make each meeting pay for itself. He thought that was cruel. Until I had to point him out, that's what the seventh tradition says. If you can't pay for your rent and your refreshments, then you don't belong there. Then what you should do is take your little band of misfits and gather up with another group where they can become self-supporting through their own contribution. Combine into this one place so you can be free from dictates to other people who want to dictate things to you, such as the Great Nestor. Eight is my very favorite. Alcoholics Anonymous should remain forever non-professional. I should remain forever non-professional. I'm an amateur faith healer. That's what I am. This is not my occupation, my advocation. I do this for free, and I do it for fun. I don't, when I'm new in Alcoholics Anonymous out of the penitentiary, I've got this job working in the oil field, but they don't work me very much because I don't know how to do nothing. I don't know how to put a wrench on a pipe straight because I put it on backwards and it hurts people. I'm a real danger to people. That's why they put me 90 foot up in that monkey board so I wouldn't hurt anybody. Then I drop things on folks, so they didn't know what the hell to do with me. But I'm really kind of struggling. I don't have any money. I got a wife and they brought my oldest daughter back, and she gave birth to this other little child, and I got these two little kids at home, and I'm working and struggling. She don't work, and I'm working, and I've got things going, and somehow or other, the warden of the penitentiary I was in, who knew I was doing well as far as staying sober was, who watched me change in the penitentiary, recommended my name to attend a symposium of service in a place which is now Norco, which is a federal penitentiary, but it was that time with an old naval hospital that had been shut down, and they were thinking about opening up a center. And the theme of this symposium was the role of the offender in treatment. And so I went out there. I don't know what I'm going to go into. I ain't got nothing to do. They ain't working me that day, so I go out there. And essentially what they did, they offered me a job working for the state of California as a liaison. That's a good word for stool pigeon, but it's a good word. And what I was supposed to do was take these parolees to AA meetings and keep tabs on them. Sounds good. They offered me $1,000 a month. They offered me a state car and a little office down there at the parole office. I could put a little sign on my desk so I'd know who I was. Anybody came in there, I could turn around and see I was Johnny. And I thought, God, it sounded good. Now, when you're hungry, in 1962, $1,000 a month is a lot of money, particularly when you ain't working very much. And you got two little kids. If you got it, look good, which is a trap that a lot of people fall into, don't get me wrong. And the thing that saved me, man, I'd ready to leap on it. God damn, it sounded good to me. I got an old rattle trap car that very often doesn't run half the time. Breaks down wherever it goes. The only thing that saved me is that I had to, they had a break, and I had to take an old lady by the name of Myrtle Snyder, who was very dear to me, to an AA meeting that night, a lady who carried a message to me, as a matter of fact, in the penitentiary, is like a mother to me. And I'm telling her all this neat stuff. Go, won't be long now, ma. Man, we're going to have a new car. I'm going to come and get you. We have to worry about getting to the meeting and getting back. Sometimes we didn't make it. And get to the meeting. I have this new car, man. We go to meet. I'll be working 8 hours a day. No more of these. Go out on the jobs. Come home whenever I want to, man. I mean, I got 8 hours. I go down to that office, come back. Newcomers, take a lot of newcomers to meetings. Well, we'll have all kinds of newcomers. She said, God, that sounds good, honey. But I want to ask you a question. So, shoot, I got all the answers in here. She says, how do you sell a gift? She says, particularly when the gift ain't yours. That the gift of sobriety was given to you for free and for fun. So you give it away for free and for fun. I had to go back to that place the next day and tell these people, much to my dismay, that I couldn't accept their job, but if they wanted me to come to their institution and talk to them about the disease of alcoholism when I wasn't working, I'd be glad to do that at my own expense. That's a decision I have never, ever, ever regretted making. And I didn't make the decision because, you see, I was given the gift of sobriety for free and for fun. I'm not a professional. I watched many, many people jump out of our fellowship and jump into these become professionals here, and 85-90% of them get drunk. And most of them are bums who wouldn't work anyhow. So I've never regretted that. But I almost got caught up in that trap. I can understand it very well. Man, I'm going to help people. I'm going to get people to Alcoholics Anonymous meetings, and I'm going to do all these things that I'm spiritually intoxicated doing. Except I've got to realize that he who pays the piper calls the tune. And sooner or later, they're going to say, okay, this is what we want you to do now. And if you don't do it, but I can't do that. That's against the AA program. Do you want to get paid or not? Kind of get used to that comfort zone from your left hip pocket to your spiritual nature. It's funny how much more spiritual I am when my bills are paid. And there ain't nobody knocking on the door and I got a couple bucks in my pocket. And how I am when things are going a little tough on them short commission months. I've always believed that spirituality has a direct correlation with your hip pocket. It was real easy to be spiritual when you got... You ever hear them talk about... You ever hear people stand up and say, I'm not into material things. No. They've got a new Mercedes. Why in the hell would they be into material things? Material things are down right. No, they're not. Material things can be just as spiritual as anything else. I like nice things. But it's not my primary purpose in life to accumulate them around me. My primary purpose in life is not to gather up any type of great intellectual knowledge so I know more than the next person coming down the race, so I can sit around and tell myself how wonderful I am because I know more than him. No, my primary purpose in life is to stay sober and carry the message to the alcoholics who still suffer. And to do that, I got to adhere to all these things. I got to be self-supporting through my own contributions. I got to be non-professional. I got to have no. I can't be too organized. You know, I'm not very organized. I just, you know, and what that means is that Alcoholics Anonymous is not organized. In most organizations that I've ever been to in a corporate world, it's a very simple thing. Everything is, you got the corporate structure that's there. You got the CEO and the presidents and the vice presidents, and from them spring other ones. You know, secretaries and sales managers and on and on and on. From them swing other ones, salesmen and stuff. And God, they look like a jangling ball or something just hanging there. And Alcoholics Anonymous is completely and totally reversed. Do you know who the lowest person on a totem pole is in Alcoholics Anonymous? New York General Service Office. They're the bottom of the pile here. You know who the most important cog is, the head man in Alcoholics Anonymous is? You are. The member. Alcoholics Anonymous. The members sitting in these rooms are the most important people in Alcoholics Anonymous. Do you know that if they closed New York General Service Office tomorrow, that Alcoholics Anonymous would still be alive and well? But do you know that if all the groups disappeared, you could still have general service, but no AA. That's what they mean by organization. We don't have any organization here. The least, the concepts, and we're not going to get into the concepts, thank God, because I have to keep you here to midnight. And you talk about something boring. They're even boring to me, and I'd listen to myself talk about it. Jesus, let's get going here. You know that the smallest voice an Alcoholics Anonymous can be heard. Did you know that? It's amazing. Not very long ago, they had this big thing big, they're always coming out with great ideas from New York about another edition of our book. And because there had been enough people around who saw the destruction that the third edition did, they decided that they didn't want a fourth edition with more of that gobbledygook in it. So it was voted down by the membership. I was very proud of them. Proud of my group, man. They said, no, we don't want it. I don't know how they felt about it in New York, but some of these people who are in general service think that they're the upper echelon in AA. You know who the most important person in AA really is? Coffee makers. The coffee maker. Who made the coffee here? Nobody's taking blame for it, for Christ's sakes. It was bad, for Christ's sakes. I wouldn't take blame for it either. He's the most important person here. You know why? You can show up here without a speaker and everything go along fine. I get somebody else to talk. Show up here when there ain't no coffee made. You talk about somebody catching hell. They're going to find out who's responsible for that right now. And until they find out who's responsible, they don't care where five speakers show up or not. They want to know about it. I said that one night in a conference where they were introducing every trustee and past trustee in 20 years in that area. When they got all through with them people, I asked that question. Any coffee makers here tonight? Yeah, they're all proud. Coffee makers are proud except for him. They're proud. I'm a coffee maker. You know, I make coffee. They all stuck up their hands. That's why I love coffee makers. That's why I think they're important, because I'm one. It hasn't got nothing to do personal, but you know, just throwing it. They all stuck up their hand. I said, "Are there any newcomers?" Newcomers, yeah, they are. I said, "I want you to look at these people, because they're the most important people in Alcoholics Anonymous. Because the coffee makers in a group of Alcoholics Anonymous are what makes it go. Coffee makers are important. They get there early and they make coffee, and they have it set up for the rest of us when we come signing in to take our places. And if you've ever been to a meeting where the coffee ain't ready yet, and I have, it's hell to pay. I mean, I really get indignant about it. I say, what? The goddamn coffee ain't ready? Well, no, the coffee maker's drunk. Or the coffee maker ran off with the money or something. But I tell you something, in my home group, Monday night meeting that I go to, my home group, in all the years, we've been here 25 years, and none of our coffee makers ever got drunk while they were making coffee. A couple of them made it when they resigned from making coffee, but they haven't made it. Important. Where are we at now? We have no opinion on outside issues. I don't know what I've been doing here for 4 hours, but outside issues. You know, I mean, politics, and I shouldn't stand in a meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous and read to you about who you should vote for. That's what destroyed the Washingtonians. Who's important, what political party, you know, who's running for, you know, we don't have any flyers on here for Daley or whoever the mayor is running for office, or who, which presidential candidate we like the best. I have my own personal opinion, who I like better, but I'm not going to sit here and give you my personal opinion about it, because that's an outside issue. Somebody wrote in one of the questions this morning, what about drugs and all these other things? That's an outside issue too. That's an outside issue. Overeating, Sex Anonymous. I was at a place not very long ago where they had on a bulletin board, Sex Anonymous meets by the pool at 9 o'clock in the morning. Clancy and I walked by there to see if anybody's getting ready to have a slip. They didn't think it was funny when we asked them. Anybody shaky up there? An opinion. We can't be drawn into public controversy. You never see AA endorses Joe Blow for candidate. That's happened to the Washingtonians. Destroyed them. In the early beginning of Alcoholics Anonymous, they used to have those kind of things. People in different areas would go voice these people and do all this kind of stuff. And my public relation policy based on attraction, not promotion. We promote things around here. One of the greatest things that I know about, in my home group, we don't announce the speakers. Because there are some celebrity speakers who wander around and talk, and they got little crowds of people who follow them around. But what these people don't know in these struggling meetings are trying to get this thing built up is the same people who followed the little speaker in there last week will go where he's speaking next week, or she's speaking next week. So we don't announce them. And I'm really very sad about that, because there's a lot of times, like last Monday, if I'd have known who was speaking, I'd have watched TV that night. I probably would have. I probably wouldn't have went. I'd have probably just said, oh, I really don't feel like going to the meeting tonight. I'm developing a little headache. You understand that, girls. Just, I don't feel like that. My head hurts. I'm not going. I'm not doing that. I just don't feel good. I do things like that. I'm sorry. I mean, you thought you were coming to hear some kind of a spiritual giant. You found a weak, fallible human being who believes Alcoholics Anonymous works. You think because I've been sober 36 and a half years that I should almost soar. But I don't. My head may be in the cloud, but my feet are on the ground. I'm just a basic, weak, fallible human being who's found a way to live in a world without having to drink alcohol. A world that I, after all these years, I really don't belong in. I really don't. Sometimes I think I still wait for my spaceship to come back and get me. Then I come to a meeting and sit with the rest of the aliens. We're all like that here. I mean, we're just all, you know, we're just all oddballs. And here we are. We gather up all oddballs, and somehow or other there's enough power in all of our little oddities to bind us together to make a program of recovery that's beautiful, that's helped more people than all the combined therapy in the history of the world has. What a wonderful thing Alcoholics Anonymous is. Sometimes I'm awed by the power that's here. It can take a clown like me and drag me out of there and put me in a world where it says I can't live without medication, and that my clinically insanity will spring up and attack people from time to time, and make me just basically comfortable, happy human being who doesn't know too much, who's just simple. And the only thing I really know is that Alcoholics Anonymous works. And the only thing I really know, the only thing I've ever really done perfect in the last 36 and a half years, I haven't taken a drink or swallowed any mood-altering chemicals. That's the only thing I've ever done perfect in my entire life for any period of time. The basic best you ever get here is basic human being. This is what this 12th tradition is all about. A lot of people think that anonymity is because we're ashamed of ourselves, because we're alcoholic. It has got anything to do. That's another one of those stupid things that anonymity means. You hear people all the time, well-meaning but stupid people, say we ought to come out of the closet and let us people know what we're all about. Hide behind the shame of alcoholism. That's not what it says at all. It says basically the foundation of our tradition is the foundation of all of my traditions, that I do not get any credit at all or take any credit at all for the great blessing that's been bestowed on me because of Alcoholics Anonymous. That's what anonymity means to me. That's what the 12th tradition means to me. That I get no personal glory whatsoever for the great blessing that's been given to me. And in this book, Alcoholics Anonymous, it says back here somewhere, in the long form of the tradition, and finally, we of Alcoholics Anonymous believe that the principle of anonymity has an immense spiritual significance. It reminds us that we are to place principles before personalities, that we are actually to practice a genuine humility. This to the end that our great blessings may never spoil us, that we will forever live in thankful contemplation of Him who presides over us all. That, my dear friends, is what Alcoholics Anonymous is all about. And that's what I'm all about, and I'm very appreciative that you came here and you sit and you listen very attentively. And I love you, and I'll be back. Thank you very much.